Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Tonight we continue our adventure into the outer and inner spaces with Hercules and the space gods. And our guest is Michael Del Russi. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you?
Good evening. It's happy to be with you and the listeners once more.
Same here, and tonight is going to be a special night because we'll be reviewing the past and planning for the future. Starting in August, by August 8th, we'll have launched our first Zoom show, so there will be an audio-visual component to the show from now on. Some of them will be on audio only, and some of them will be audio and video, and we plan on extending the range of where we broadcast from Blog Talk Radio to YouTube and also to Facebook so that we can reach more people. So today we'll be planning that as well as discussing things that we've touched upon before. Now, Michael, you became interested in UFOs fairly early. Is that correct?
Yes, I did, way back in the early and middle 60s. And my brother and I formed our own UFO group called the UIFOB. And that was in existence for about 5 years. We had almost close to 100 members here in Essex County, and we published a newsletter called Flying Saucers Unlimited. And basically, we covered some of the outstanding cases of that time and some cases that perhaps were not so well known. And from there, it just grew and grew in terms of our interest and our passion for the subject, and it's been that way ever since. And I know it influenced, my brother was a cosmic artist, and I know it influenced the art throughout the decades.
And in honor of your brother, I would like to, each time we have a show under the new system or promote the show, to put down a link to some of his art, both on Facebook and on his website as well, so that people can enjoy that.
Okay, we will certainly try to do that, and I appreciate that effort very much. I would, if I like to, I'd like to open up this segment. I'd like to call it Flying Saucers Here and Now.
Okay.
And I would like to open up the segment with a poem that I've written. That is part of my collection called One Passion Beyond Poetry and Art, dealing with the mysteries that we're interested in, if you may. And I'd like to share that with you.
I love that.
The title of the poem is Encounter Unidentified. Air current scorched, blurred vision, trembling thoughts. It lifted from the field, silent, circular green, red flashing. It floated defiant to claim the night sky for its own. Creatures ceased in their call as if in reverence or fear, and I whispered to my panicked limbs not to abandon me. A white beam of light sought me out as I scrambled to the brush, rabbit-like, with eyes wide in horror, and then nothing, silence, just the face of the moon damp and smirking. And that's a poem depicting what quite often during that period of time would be considered a classic UFO experience, and that's from my collection, and I thought I might like to share that with the audience.
Thank you so much for doing so. Would you like to share this poem each time that we have a show together on UFOs?
I certainly would. I think it's it opens up the pathways in terms of a receptive consciousness to the mystery, the ongoing mystery of UFOs, and I would certainly like to do that.
And you'd like to call the show Flying Saucers Here and Now?
Yes, this my segment, if I can. I wanted to share some reflections. First of all, before we go any farther, I would like to congratulate you as a new grandfather.
Oh, thank you so very much.
Do we have a boy or a girl on our hands?
We have a boy, and his name is Nico, or Nicholas, as it would be in English, or Nick. He was born 2 days ago, and I'm very excited. This is one of the happiest days of my life.
Well, we're all very excited for you here at Bold Spirits, and congratulations.
Thank you so very much.
I would like to share some questions, if I can, questions for reflection, and
sure.
Then perhaps we can move on from there. As we now reflect upon the admission of our government that UFOs exist, and we don't know what they are. Our government says they do exist, but we don't know what they are. Is a new cosmic awareness awaiting civilization at this point, individually and collectively? Is there a cosmic inheritance awaiting mankind? And if so, how will it manifest itself? And thirdly, could meditating upon mysterious phenomena in and of itself open up our pathways to receive arcane wisdom? And I'd like to, I appreciate you sharing some of your insights on that, if you can, because I really do feel UFOs and the flying saucer phenomena is just one of many vehicles, but can indeed be a vehicle to open up our consciousness to receive messages from the invisible world, messages from beyond, and expand our own thinking in terms of what these mysteries might be. I'd like to hear your feelings on that concept, if
sure.
I can.
Well, under the aegis of Hercules and the space gods, we're going to be exploring all these mysteries. And it's taken a few years, but we're finally at a point where we have several individuals, including yourself, and several organizations, for instance, the Unarius Academy of Science, and the Ashtar Command, and the Urantia book, and the Sixth Revelation. You know, these are all groups that are out there who focus on communicating with the celestials in order to help humanity evolve and take more responsibility of the world that we all share, rather than being victims, to become co-creators and create a better world than the one that we currently live in. So, again, it's taken a while longer than I thought it would take, but it's here. Now we have a platform where people can share their thoughts openly and exchange ideas and look past the areas where we don't see eye to eye, and to respect where we don't see eye to eye, and try to find what we have in common, and then try to build on what we have in common to more effectively get the message out. So, we also look at the flying saucer phenomenon from a variety of different angles. One of them is the cosmic or the celestial. The other is what is now called the ancient alien theory. It used to be called the ancient astronaut theory. And that ties with the ancient civilization theory, where humanity itself had evolved at various points in time, and they did go out into space. They certainly had very advanced knowledge of the stars. So we explore that as well, and we look at the UFO phenomenon in its spiritual components, its psychic components, and also its physical components. Jointly, regardless of what our perspective is, trying to find the truth and share it. And I guess the comparison I'm drawing is that old story about the blind men and the elephant, where, you know, one person's feeling part of the trunk and they say that the elephant's like a snake. Another one's feeling the leg and they're saying, no, the elephant's like a tree. And third one's feeling the tail and says, no, the elephant's like a paintbrush. And then somebody's feeling the ear and says, no, it's kind of like a sail or a piece of cloth or something. And all of them are right, you know, because of what they themselves are focusing on. But none of them are right because they're only getting parts of the picture. And you have to figure out how these disparate pieces fit together. And it's not easy. Just like trying to make sense of all these different impressions about an elephant from blind men. So that's the approach we're taking, and knowing that regardless what conclusions we've come to, there's always more to learn. And by sharing with each other, we could eventually fill in the areas where we're all blind and don't understand. So that's how the journey will continue. And I looked at the shows that people have been most responsive to, and one of them is the Sword and Sandal show. So Sword and Sandal will have more of that. And the other one is the UFO shows, you know, And those are my two greatest preoccupations. And with the sword and sandal, I'll include mythology. So that's good. So as we move forward into the Lion's Portal in early August, past all the Hercules holidays in ancient Rome, we're going to launch the next chapter in our adventure, where we're focusing on it much more consistently and much more often. We're going from straight audio to audio visual, and then we're seeking for a way to reach a larger circle of people. So I'm excited by this adventure, and I'm very honored that you're on it.
Well, I'm excited also in these different pathways that you're opening up for all of us to share and receive wisdom. I couldn't be more enthusiastic about this. And I think you're correct. And I think just meditating, I think sitting back, and now that there is an official announcement as nationwide, if you will, that, and it's funny that we had to wait 6 decades for our government to finally make this announcement that, yes, they are here, and even go a step further, we don't know what they are. And they may very well be of an alien source. They have not ruled that out. The official report has not ruled out that possibility. So the question at this point would be, do they still know more than they are saying? Then we have to, they claim they don't know, but I'm sure there's some classified information that is still in the government's possession that has not been revealed through the Freedom of Information Act that would be of incredible interest to the populace at large. And, you know, you were talking a minute ago about the different areas of wisdom that your researchers and are bringing to you and these different groups. And, I also find that a place of excitement, because I think we all, once we sit back and meditate on these mysteries, once we sit back and meditate on the existence of the invisible world, and there is an invisible world out there that's teeming with different types of life and different types of intellects, it takes me back to some of the early contactees of the 60s and the 50s, George Adamski. He claimed to meet friendly aliens who took him to the moon and other planets. Now, whoever believes that or rejects it, the fact of the matter is, George Adamski, even before his flying saucer experience, was reaching out for untapped knowledge, if you will.
Yeah.
He was studying the secrets of Tibet. He was in process of creating his own mystery school. So even then, arcane wisdom was speaking to him. Divine wisdom, cosmic wisdom was speaking to him. Daniel Fry was another UFO contactee. I recall him vividly. He claimed to ride in a remote control ship, meeting an alien named Alan, who revealed many different aspects of the universe and what might lie ahead. Then I believe there was George Van Tassel. He claimed to have been given secrets of health and immortality through a Venusian. Howard Menger, you may remember Howard Menger.
Yeah.
He worked quite hard in building a free energy-based invention based on his contact and his exposure to extraterrestrial science. So the point is, these gentlemen could very well have been receiving cosmic awareness, because they were reaching out right from the start. They were pioneers. The spirit, the pioneer spirit into the vastness of the unknown was there and calling to each one of these researchers. And, of course, the sacrifices they made were quite significant in terms of reputation and in terms of scrutiny, criticism. So we have to tip our hats to those early researchers, those of us who read their material or exposed ourselves to their material. We wanted to know what this secret, what this arcane knowledge was all about, knowledge you just didn't get everywhere. In fact, you got practically nowhere unless you were seeking this wisdom. So I tip my hat to all of these great researchers, names of that have become legendary in the UFO field at this point in time. They were indeed brave warriors, each one of them, though they, as you pointed out, even though they may have been walking separate paths. So I honor them all.
Is that the most fascinating aspect of the UFO mystery to the contactees?
I think that's one of the I am convinced that the contactees were indeed receiving extraterrestrial knowledge and some kind of wisdom. Again, I think that if we sit back and we'll pick the flying saucer phenomenon as an example, if we sit back and just meditate on the possibility of extraterrestrial intelligence and just meditate on that a while, I truly feel that cosmic wisdom will open to us. Those pathways will open to us. It's just a matter of meditating on these possibilities. And I think automatically those pathways will open up to us, and who knows what's available at that point to each one of us individually and collectively down the road. There are some cases, though. There's one case I would like to discuss briefly tonight. It's
sure.
one of the most baffling and in some ways terrifying cases. And it's the Cash Landrum UFO encounter. Landrum is spelled L-A-N-D-R-U-M. A lady by the name of Betty Cash, along with a friend, Vicky Landrum, and her 7-year-old son, Kobe Landrum, were driving home near the city of Houston, Texas, December 29th, 1980, with Betty at the wheel. And the report I'm reading to you is straight from MUFON archives. This is straight from, and MUFON continues to be one of the most respected UFO organizations in the world. With Betty at the wheel, they were on a highway which ran through a forest of oak and pine trees. This was in Texas. At this point, Colby, the grandson, pointed to a bright light above the trees ahead of them. Becoming larger and larger, it began to look like a diamond of fire. Betty slammed on the brakes, and the three watched the UFO hover above the road. From treetop level, it sank to about 25 feet above the road, gave out a blast of fire, then rose again. They climbed out of the car to get a closer look, which was now lighting up the trees and the highway around it. The object seemed to be made of a dull aluminum, and the four points of its diamond shape were rounded. A row of blue lights ran across its center, and it would occasionally emit a beeping sound. A powerful heat was coming from the UFO, and Colby begged his grandmother to get back into the car. They both did, but Betty stayed outside and watched the thing move up and away. The car at this point was so hot, she could not touch the door with bare hands. Then a fleet of helicopters appeared. Now, Betty went on to explain in detail how these did not look like regular helicopters. They looked like military helicopters. They just didn't look like your average helicopter that you see every day. They seemed to rush in from all directions, said Betty. It seemed like they were trying to encircle the thing. They drove on another 5 miles, then stopped to look back. They could still see the UFO and the helicopters around it. They counted 23 in total. Over the next few hours, the trio developed painful swelling and blisters on their skin, along with severe headaches and upset stomachs. Betty's eyes also became swollen to the point where she had to be hospitalized. Colby suffered sunburn like rash, and Vicky's hair began to fall out. When her hair did grow back, it was of a different texture and color. Doctors said their symptoms were consistent with exposure to intense electromagnetic radiation. Investigators later established that other witnesses could confirm the UFO's flight path and appearance and the presence of unusual numbers of what they recognized later was CH-47 helicopters. They were evidently some type of military helicopter, which are quite distinctive in the sky that night. Now, I have some notes here of interest. There are photos. Now, you can get these photos on YouTube. All you have to do is punch in the Cash Landrum UFO case. You will see them. Specifically on on any UFO channel, Unsolved Mysteries, will have the complete story. There are photos of both the blisters on their skin as well as the patches of hair loss. And Betty was hospitalized for over a month. The interesting thing about this case, to our knowledge, the first and only case in which the United States government was sued. As far as it is known, this was one of the only UFO cases where the United States Air Force and the U.S. government was sued for $20 million in their belief that the UFO was an experimental Air Force craft. Now, Betty has gone on to say very clearly she doesn't really believe it was an alien craft, although she admits it could have been. She felt it was a test craft of the Air Force of some kind. But obviously, whatever it was something the likes of which has never been seen before. It was diamond-shaped, brilliant in its structure. The flames were sprouting out, and it emitted intense radiation. A policeman in Dayton, Texas, did not see the UFO, but did see the fleet of helicopters. After years of recurring symptoms and suffering, the lawsuit was dismissed, not because the helicopters were not seen, but because it could not be proved that they belonged to the Air Force. Now, again, if you go to YouTube, you'll see various interviews with both Betty and Vicky, and you can see these individuals. The honesty and sincerity was clearly there. They had indeed suffered an experience the likes of which they couldn't even comprehend, and their lives were affected greatly for over 20 years.
Wow.
The Air Force never admitted either to the existence of the helicopters or the UFO, even though the helicopters, again, were seen by other citizens in that Dayton, Houston, Texas area. Eventually, up until their deaths, both women suffered from reoccurring symptoms. The case is considered one of the most frightening and baffling in UFO history. So here we have women. There were clearly burn marks on their hands, their arms. The patches of hair were missing, and sometimes the hair would grow back and would fall out again. The grandson experienced burns on his face as if he was in the sun or on the beach or what have you, and there was intense electromagnetic radiation. Betty and Vicky wrote to Senator Lloyd Benson. You may remember him. I believe he ran for president at one time from Texas.
Uh-huh.
And Senator Tower, in the hopes of getting some help. They were interviewed at local Air Force base for 2 hours, individually and collectively. They noticed a large map on the wall indicating the exact location where they had witnessed the UFO. Dr. Brian McClelland, who was Betty's personal physician, and you can find this right on YouTube, said Betty fought several types of cancer afterwards, and all three of them had elevated white blood counts that they were dealing with throughout the years. So evidently their immune systems were being challenged in some way. Vicky and Betty eventually passed. The grandson has spoken about the case occasionally, but prefers not to even think about it any longer. So here we have, again, the only UFO case known to date that involved a lawsuit, a government lawsuit, and the case was never really solved. Betty Cash was hospitalized every year for the next 18 years until her death. After that event, former MUFON director Bud Schussler, I believe I'm pronouncing the name correctly, you may be familiar with him, he was the president of MUFON for many, many years, visited the site, and a large black burn mark was seen right in the middle of that highway. It was later discovered that the spot was dug up and the road was paved over. Both Betty and Vicky, unfortunately, have passed. To my knowledge, the grandson, Colby, is still living. I don't have much information on him at this time, but this had to be one of the most shocking and in some ways terrifying UFO encounter in the history of sightings, at least in this country. So I wanted to share that with you because I think UFO experiences like this that are so raw, so real, so technical, so physical should be available for the listeners to, certainly think about and mull over. And this was one of those cases. This was real. It was physical. It was technical. It was material. And till this day, no one has any answers. And these poor people have passed on to the next level of existence and never getting the satisfaction that they were seeking. And again, even though they did sue for money, you'll see fairly clearly in the interviews that they did multiple interviews, it wasn't about the money. And I believe it was Betty who said, "Look, no matter what the source of this craft was, it may have been, even if it was some kind of new weapon that the United States mm-hmm. had working on," she said, "I could even accept that because this is my country." She said, "But we would like to know. We would like to know what this was, what this experience was." So I was impressed by that.
Yes.
These were really good citizens. So I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on this case, and if you've ever heard of it or if you're familiar with it.
I've heard of it, but long ago, and the details weren't in my mind as much as I would have liked, but I remember hearing of this story. And one of the questions I had was, if the United States government would not take responsibility for the aircraft or any of the service, like the Air Force did not take responsibility for the aircraft, who were these helicopters supposed to belong to?
Well... the victims, Betty and Vicky, they assumed that, again, they were United States Air Force helicopters. The helicopters had a marking that indicated, and again, it was a CH-7, I believe it was. They didn't see any markings in terms of United States Air Force. That was not written on the helicopters. But these markings, and I think, again, it was a CH-7, I believe, where the numbers and the letter, were painted onto the helicopters, they were not denying that helicopters were seen. What they evidently were denying was that the helicopters belonged to the Air Force. Then you have to ask yourself, well, whose helicopters were they?
Right.
They had counted helicopters. It started off at about 20, but Colby kept telling his grandmother, "Look, Graham, look, there's more." They had counted as many as 26 helicopters in the air that night, and the Air Force took no responsibility. As far as they were concerned, they claimed no ownership, obviously, to the helicopters. And denied they didn't have any craft in that area, any experimental craft. They denied that as well. And yet these women suffered physically, mentally, psychologically, and the grandson, by the way, suffered severe psychological trauma, so much so that even seeing a helicopter in the sky, the child would just go into a panic. The child was only 7 years old at the time. And when you consider that they turned to some major political figures at that time, Senator Benson, he ran for president in one time on the Democratic ticket, and Senator Tower. They wrote to these two individuals wanting answers. They said, "What we want more than anything else are answers. What happened to us that night? What did we see?"
Right.
At one point, the dashboard of the car was so hot that when one of the women put their hands on it, they left an imprint. In other words, the dashboard evidently was softening. She actually left an imprint of her hand on the dashboard. It was a diamond-shaped object spewing lights and spewing flames. being escorted by these copters. And till this day, no one has offered an explanation. These poor women have passed on. Their lawsuit was denied for lack of evidence. That basically, that was the judge's ruling. There was no evidence, but there was plenty of evidence, to the point where, again, Bud Schussler, who went to the highway, there was clearly a huge burn mark in the highway, in the concrete, and it was dug up and paved over. So what was this all about? When I read and studied this case, and I had heard about it for many years, but really never went in depth with it, but you can see the honesty and sincerity in these women. And
right.
They said, but we really want our answers. And they went to the highest authorities that they were able to connect with at that time, two major politicians who were known nationwide, and they were interviewed by the Air Force on more than one occasion, individually and collectively. And with all of this, they came away with nothing. No sense of admittance of any kind, no one taking any responsibility. And so I think this is one of the classic, really classic, almost frightening cases in many ways. But I think it's a case that every UFOologist and researcher should certainly know about.
Oh, yes, most certainly. When can these be released through information access through the I'm drawing a blank now, through the Freedom of Information Act?
Well, unfortunately, as far as I know, the Freedom of Information Act did not have any effect on this case. As far as I know, whatever information can be gleaned has been gleaned. Now, we can talk all day about what's not being released, because it's my understanding that even through the Freedom of Information Act, there's certain information concerning UFO phenomenon that is still blacked out. It's still blacked out. Not everything the government knows has been released. Not everything the government knows has been released. I don't know if you ever heard this story, but I'd like to share this with you. You may have heard it. Have you heard the Jackie Gleason UFO tale?
Yes, I have, but share it. It's a good one.
It is a good one. And his ex-wife wrote a book detailing what Jackie came home and shared with her. And she had said that he was white as a ghost. This was a real event, something he had seen, something he was out golfing with President Nixon. They were evidently fairly close friends, and they were drinking and what have you. And President Nixon took him to an underground bunker. I think it was Wright Patterson Air Force Base, but I'm not sure. And it's there that he showed Jackie what appeared to be, I believe it was, four tiny little alien bodies in a cryogenic state. And Jackie Gleason came home, and he said to his wife at the time, he said, "You would not believe what I saw today." She did put it in a book. I don't know if the book was ever published.
Okay.
But from what I understand, there's some real validity behind this story as well. So, I mean, the government has information that they have not released yet. So here they are with a brand-new report here in the year 2021, finally admitting to the public, yes, they exist. We don't know what they are, and they may be of an alien nature. And, I remember going back growing up in the 50s, the experts always pondered whether, if the truth were known, you probably have heard this, would there be riots in the streets? Would there be panic? Would our religious institutions collapse as we know it? Well, obviously, none of that has happened. None of that is. I think we live in an age where people can pretty much accept the reality of the existence of other races at this point. Don't you feel the same way, that the consciousness of the nation has at least arrived at that level?
Yeah, I think so. And as you pointed out before, after all these years, we get an admission that there's something there. We don't know what it is, which was already known to anybody who followed the mystery. However, you know, it is a good thing for it to be said and to be out in the open, because other countries have shared the same thing. And if you look at their disclosures also, you can glimpse beyond what our government has admitted. But I think we're in need of wisdom at this particular point in time. And the phenomenon, whatever it is, always points us to the heavens. It always points us to the fact that there is something, a power or powers that are beyond us. And through their different religions and mythologies that they've helped create in the world, there's always hidden there the understanding that humanity can rise to a higher level. And regardless of what our understanding of that is, apotheosis, metempsychosis, reincarnation, ascension, you know, whatever way we choose to look at it, the core teaching is that there's more to us than we know, and that more of us can develop and reach the heavens. So I believe there's a lot of credence in what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we are living in a time where the cosmic consciousness is available to us, and I agree with your statement that, you know, even though the revelations from the government officially are not everything we would have liked, well, it's a very general statement, to say the least. It's a all-encompassing statement. By that I mean you can interpret it many ways. But they're admitting there's a mystery, and they don't know what it is. It's up to us at this point to ponder what these vehicles might be. You know, we know that there is some in the UFO field that feel now at this point that maybe these are interdimensional.
Right.
You know, there may be other dimensions around us, and somehow these vehicles are finding the portals to travel through. Travel to hopscotch other dimensions, and that's always a possibility. I believe at this point that they are alien craft, and I remember my grandfather, who was also believed in UFOs. It ran in my family pretty much. My father was not really all that a religious man, but he also believed in the UFO phenomenon. He used to work nights. And I remember him coming home late at night, and the next morning we would find magazines like Fate and True and Odyssey. You probably remember those publications. And
yes, I do.
They always had, usually on the front cover, it was major stories, about UFOs and photographs. And we ate it up, you know, we loved it. And so I guess the influence was there. Genetically, if you will. But this admittance is a good thing. I agree with you. This final revelation from the government that, you know, I guess they felt, why fight it anymore? You
right.
know, our pilots are seeing these things on a regular basis. There's no point in fighting it any longer. But addressing your question earlier, yes, I do believe there's lots of information that they still have that, for some reason, has not been tapped into, has not been revealed. I think it's tons of information. Over six decades, there has to be much that they have continued to hide from the public. But I think eventually we will learn more and more.
I believe that as well. And right now, because of the information age and the internet, we have access to a lot more information globally than we ever did. So things that before you might have had to hunt for the information and come across it in obscure magazines and in other obscure books. Now, with a few clicks of our fingers, we can access a lot of the lore that's accumulated around UFOs since antiquity.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly right. And programs like this, the pathways that you have opened up to this information, to these revelations and enlightenment, this helps to get the word out, obviously, in a huge way. And for me, it's very exciting because back in the 60s, early 70s, right through the 70s, you know, those of us who considered ourselves researchers, it was an uphill battle. You know, it was an uphill
right.
battle. We didn't have these avenues of communication and revelation available to us. We just didn't have it. So to have this opportunity now for all of us to be able to share and receive the wisdom from other researchers and then present it to the general public at large, this is in many ways an exciting time that we're living in.
It is. It's a very exciting time, and I'm looking forward to the days when the pandemics and its effects have passed, because I have in New York and Pennsylvania and here in New Jersey, I've had open gatherings at the libraries and other institutions where people can come in and share their experiences and exchange their thoughts on the phenomenon. That's something that I want to start again, plus through adult education classes, community education classes. I used to teach workshops, and people used to come to learn. Like I had one that ran several times in two different states on the different types of UFO aliens and how they tie to mythology.
I would love to partake in a class like that.
So I'm waiting for classes to open up again. There was an opportunity open for me to start teaching it again in through Zoom classes for a local school system. However, mm-hmm. I have to let it wait because we're launching the Zoom channel now. So I had to let that opportunity pass. But as mm-hmm. soon as another semester starts, I guess the winter semester, I'll be revisiting that again.
Well, I would be very excited to attend a class like that, absolutely. More than one, obviously, whatever's available. That would certainly be a source of interest for me. And I'm grateful that you're seeing fit to offer that kind of education.
And in the first one I'll start is in the Amber Dragon, which is a metaphysical and crystal store in mm-hmm. northwestern New Jersey. And until the pandemic, for a few years, I was teaching there once a month. And we explored mm-hmm. a lot of the cosmic mysteries that the contactees have brought us. So I was informed this week by a couple of people who still go there that they'd love for me to come back and continue that. So it'll be running there. So I'm going to have one in northeastern New Jersey, one in northwestern New Jersey, and then I just need to focus on South Jersey at some point. And also we're working with Nick Curto and the Disclosure Network New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of people who are into, you know, researchers into UFOs. So we tap into them through Nick's show. And also with Tim Beckley, I've contributed to 16 of his anthologies. And a lot of the other writers have been on the show and will continue to be on the show. So we're getting a lot of folks who are very knowledgeable, and again, yourself included. So hopefully, in you know, each with our perspective and the extensive research that we've done over the years, you know, what our thoughts are as a result of all the research and investigation, we should be able to present in totality a very balanced view and get enough basic information and share resources. Now, with your show, do you want to interview people? Would you like to interview authors? Would you like to go on Zoom, audiovisual shows? What would you like to do?
Well, I have no experience with Zoom as of right now, but
okay.
You know, I if there are other opportunities, I would certainly be grateful to consider them. I would love to interview. Yes, I would love to. That was something that I do have an interest in, interviewing other researchers and other people with similar experiences and similar areas of interest. Yeah, I would definitely be open to that, sure.
Okay, great. Let me think and weigh all that, and let's see if we can come up with a plan. And also, if you know, you do the same. Together, we'll come up with a plan, and we'll make it happen. And for now, until I start with the Zoom shows and free up a lot of the podcast time, how about the show that you currently have on the first Monday of the month? You decide whether you want to make it a Bold Spirits Holistic Concept show, a Flying Saucers Here Now show, or a Retro Science Fiction show, or any combination of the three. So that'll be your hour to do whatever you'd like. And also, I'm going to, right now, I have a couple of free hours. So I will talk to you about that after the show this weekend. And I'll give you a call, and we'll see if we can schedule, like, once every couple of months, you have another show. Where, again, you can decide what that show is going to be and how much time you'd like to devote to it. And we'll start that way. And
well, that would be great.
Oh, okay. And I have a group, Hercules and the Space Gods, on Facebook as well, where I post links to the show for now. But consider it. I'll invite you there if you're not already there. And you can share whatever you like there, like links to the resources where people can go pursue the matters that you talk about on the show, announcements, anything you'd like.
Well, that's great. And, I'm so grateful that you've opened up these pathways to all of us who are bringing this information to the general public, because I think it's vital. And, it's just a wonderful experience that just to have this opportunity to share information that at one time the public was pretty much in the dark about, or it was whispered about behind closed doors, if you will. That's no longer the case now.
No.
So I'm very grateful that pioneers like yourself are opening up these pathways to all of us. You can't say enough about this opportunity.
And I forgot, you're also a passionate aficionado of peplum, as am I, the sword and sandal genre. So you could add that to the three categories, make four categories.
I certainly am, and I do have my favorites. And I hope someday to share that with the Herculean audience and the warriors in the audience as well down the road. I would be very excited just to have the opportunity to do that.
So awesome. So for now, we'll work for like the next month or so, go from an hour a month to 2 hours a month. And then you have four different categories. You can decide what you'd like to talk about on those two shows. And again, just let me know so I can structure it and promote it. But you have the freedom to decide what you'd like to focus on for those 2 hours.
Well, thank you so much. And I believe I can share some fun and exciting information with the listeners. And I will be very humble and grateful to do that.
And I'm very honored that you would, because you're a treasure trove of information, and everything you say is very well researched. And if somebody agrees with you or disagrees with you, they can't argue with the fact that you've researched the thing thoroughly. And that comes across very much with everything that you share.
Well, thank you. I do believe in being as accurate as I can with the information that I'm putting forth to the public. I think that's very, very important, notwithstanding the fact, of course, that in the world of UFOs and in the world of the mysterious phenomena, things are changing all the time.
Yeah.
So we do our best to keep up with these things.
Next, tomorrow, actually, we're having Nick Curto and Mary Jo Fahey. They have a show called Connecting the Dots. And
yes.
On the fifth Saturday of each month, and not every month has a fifth Saturday or a fifth any day, but some months do, we've been doing tracking down information on the return of the Minoans. It seems that a lot of UFO encounters and experiences, both channeling and actual, are involved entities that look like and present themselves as Minoans.
Okay.
And on one of the recent shows, I discussed with them about the Sirius mystery and the Argonauts. So Mary Jo researched that, and she's sharing it tomorrow, her research. And
I would love to. And I'll be listening.
So So we have that happening, and I'm going to use that as a starting point for sharing a lot more about my private researches with the ancient gods and the UFO enigma. So I have a lot of information on that. We'll start off with what she's found, and then I'll add to it subsequently in my writings and through the shows. So that's taken care of. And then next week we have Olaf Phillips. And Olaf is the publisher of Paranoia Magazine, the Paranoia Podcast, and he's a publisher of Paranoia Press. I've appeared in a few of his anthologies as well. And he's going to be sharing the secret cipher of the UFO Nauts, which is how ancient ciphers that were used in occult lodges throughout history to show to share information about the ultra-terrestrials or extraterrestrials that humanity's been interacting with through magical practices. So that's a whole different aspect of the mystery. So that'll be introduced into the soup tomorrow. I mean, yes, tomorrow.
That sounds very good. You know, it all contributes to opening up pathways to cosmic consciousness, which is available to all of us. That's what makes this so interesting and so exciting, is that all of these teachings contribute to opening up the pathways to cosmic consciousness, which is there, which is available to us at any given moment. So that's what makes this so exciting. So thank you for sharing that with me, and I'll be sure to be listening.
And as everybody knows, or maybe doesn't know, all of our shows are on demand. So if you miss listening to a show live, and I know many people can't listen to the show live, if you know when it was broadcast and you follow the link in the promo, it'll take you straight to the recording of the show. So this way nothing's ever missed. And even though we're no longer broadcasting on CERN, the shows we did there for nearly half a decade are still all there and still available, and they're only a click away. Some folks like Nicholas Dyack, the Unarius Academy of Science have put on their web pages links to every show that they've been on. So one of these days, when time gets freed up, I'd like to do that for all the shows. So this way, if you want to listen to any show that Michael has been on, you can just go click to it, and it'll take you there.
That would be great. That would be great to not to have the that information still available to us after the fact. That would be wonderful.
So onwards into the future, Michael, I'm very honored that you are with me on this adventure, and I'm really looking forward to all the information that you have to share. And I posted something now as we were speaking that tonight's episode of Hercules and Space Gods is dedicated to the memory of visionary artist Sam DeLucy, brother of Michael DeLucy, host of the Flying Saucers Here and Now, a new show on Mount Olympus. Anytime.
I'm really honored like that. Thank you so much.
I wish I'd gotten to know your brother.
I think you would have really liked him. He was very animated and an interesting fellow. And I know he would have liked you as well. Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome, and thank you so much. And how can people tap into all the wonderful things that you're doing?
Well, they can write to me at Michael DeLucy, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey. My zip is 0706. I'm always researching new areas of anti-aging techniques and cellular vitality, I'm looking forward to presenting more programs on that. And I do personal health and anti-aging counseling, and that's free. I don't charge for what I do. I consider this a ministry. And anyone can write to me at that address, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006, and I will be glad to work with them.
Thank you. And before we close for today, do you have any other ideas you'd like to throw on the table? Maybe we can make those happen as well.
Well, I would like to discuss at some further date more in terms of paranormal spirit experiences, if you will, ghostly experiences. I have had some, And I would like to discuss the various areas of that that part of the arcane mysteries of what are they, who are they, or did there different levels of spirit survival. I know there's other people that you've had on programs that I'm sure have discussed
yes.
that. I would like to get into that area and get some other viewpoints and share some of my own. So spirit survival is a big interest with me. I've explored mediums for many years. I've been to many mediums, and I'd like to share that aspect of the paranormal if I can. So that would be an area of interest.
Okay, add that to the list then. So we have five different categories. So if you'd like to start with that also, and I work with publishers to review books and interview authors, so I'll keep you posted on anything I get in these areas, and if you're interested, I'll mail you the book, and after you've read it, you could write a review and interview the author if you'd like.
That would be great. I'd be looking forward to that opportunity. Thank you.
Oh, that is fantastic. I'm looking forward to it, too. Pennsylvania had the Regional Folklore Society, and in New Jersey, I had the Center for the Study of the Living Myth. And for several years, I ran them out of libraries, again, both in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. And we used to have people coming in, and we've done all sorts of things on the ghosts and angels and shadows and reincarnation and visitations from those who have passed on. So people always had stories. And one of the things was a great comfort for people who couldn't share these stories with most of the people they knew because people would laugh at them or tell them they were magical things.
You're providing an incredible area of comfort with the programs that you have run. I can tell you that, because there is comfort in knowing that spirit survival is very real, and it is very real.
Yes, it is very real. And I don't know if I've shared this with you, but I've shared it on the air enough times where it's common knowledge. I was a deep trance medium in the 1970s for like half a decade.
I did not know that.
Yes, so I have like an insider's view on mediumship. Now they're called channelers.
Right.
And they don't talk about deep trance anymore, but back then it was you were a deep trance medium and you had controls and all sorts of other entities who do different things. Now a lot of people are channeling things from the theosophical type of entities, the ascended masters and so forth. But back in the day when I was doing it, very few people were actually channeling those type of entities. So that was my specialty back in the day. So we have a lot to talk about in that area too.
That's an area of great interest, and it's a vast area of exploration, and there's just no limit what you can discover in that area. I'm very interested in that as well.
Okay, so great. So we have Spirit Solstice Concepts, Flying Saucers Here and Now. Then we have a retro sci-fi cinema segment that if you want to rename, that's fine. We have a Sword and Sandal cinema segment, which you can rename. And then something paranormal, which you can find a name for. And again, for now, it's an hour, then it'll be 2 hours. Then if I have the Zoom up, all you really need for the Zoom is either a telephone or a computer where you could hook up online. And then if you want to screen a camera for your computer and or a picture that you could put up on the Zoom if you don't want.
Yeah, I could try that.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm learning it myself. I ran one as a test thing and it came out okay, but it's the real basic stuff. Later on, you could add, we could be talking with the Acropolis behind us or UFOs, but I can't do that yet. So it'll be a learning experience for all of us.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm a novice at a lot of this, but
me
I'll
too.
Get there.
Yes, you will. Thank you, Michael, again. Give my love to you. And I wish you well, and I'll talk to you this weekend.
Thank you so much. It was an exciting program, and thank you for the opportunity.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called in, whether you clicked the link and you're with us in that way, or whether you'll be checking out the show on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And for the less than a minute we have left, I will put on Golden Bough. by Virginia Ackerman.
Time stood still.